Good afternoon. My name is David Hanna. Once again, here we are in the lovely podcast studios of the Church at Laughlin Springs. Super, super vibey, super dark, mysterious.
I like it.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me want a scotch and a pipe and a good book, maybe a smoking jacket.
There's a couple books on the shelf.
There are a lot of books on the shelf. The voice that you hear, by the way, is Miss Dana Radford, who is lead singer of the Tummies.
Correct.
Right? She is the driving force behind Laughlin Table.
I wouldn't say that. I'm the face that you see when you walk through the door.
The glue that holds it all together. And we're going to get into all that in just a second. I can tell you, Miss Dana, that almost everything you see in this room is found objects that were just stuck in corners of this 120-year-old church building.
I love it.
That was gathered together to turn into this little library that we have.
It's perfect.
It's beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Once again, the reason that we do this podcast is because the Church at Laughlin Springs believes that every single person that you've ever seen in your entire life, every person you pass on the sidewalk, bears the imprint of the creator of the universe, has worth, has value, has incredible experiences and stories, and we can learn from one another, and we want to celebrate that and elevate that. So we here in East Nashville know that there are certain people that just kind of bring us all together. We're all, you know, 1 or 2 degrees separated from one another. So we would love to take some of those stories and just elevate those stories, hear from people that we know, oftentimes maybe just by face or by name, but really don't know their story. So Gooch and I have gotten together and we're trying to gather some of those stories. And today we do have Miss Dana with you. We're with us and we're so happy that you're here with
me
us.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'm super stoked.
Yep. And maybe nobody knows Dana, or at least Caesar, as much in the community as Ronald Gooch does, because I feel like 9 out of 10 times I'm at Laughlin Table, there you sit or in you come. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I just don't like to cook sometimes. And
you come to see your people.
I come to see my people.
And that's where your people are?
They come through there.
So one of the great things about this community, you've got kind of the downtown of East Nashville, which would be kind of the Five Points area. But in reality, you have these incredible corners spread throughout the community. You've got Riverside Village. Yep. Over near where I live, the corner of Greenwood and Porter with Southern Grist and yep. Vinyl Tap and Cafe Rose. You got a bunch of places like that. And right here on the corner of 16th and Woodland, maybe is one of the best ones we have.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Anchor Point, Laughlin Table. It really is the center almost, like the town hall of the Laughlin Springs neighborhood. Would that be fair?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got the church, you've got the fire station, yeah. You've got Laughlin Table.
We're all right here.
Yep.
And if it's the town hall of the Laughlin Springs community, what would that make you, Dana? If not the mayor, at least the town representative, the town crier, maybe the face of the community.
Could I be the secretary?
You very well could be.
No,
but
the secretary makes all the decisions.
Okay, no, then that's not that. Definitely not me. I just put the pieces together.
Did I detect a little kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge when you said that's definitely not me?
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I don't make all the decisions, but I certainly like to push the pieces around.
My first question for you.
Yes.
When people ask you, hey, Dan, it's very nice to meet you. What do you do? Do you go with, I'm a singer? Do you go with your job at Laughlin Table? Do you go, well, how do you describe yourself? How do you answer that question?
Well, I guess it depends on what venue I'm in.
Oh, okay.
So if I'm at Laughlin Table and people are meeting me for the first time, I am front of the house. I'm the hostess. So I celebrate that job position.
Yeah.
If I meet somebody out at a venue and I'm supporting my husband or any of my friends, then I'm Dana the singer.
Typically. Okay.
Yeah.
Which, do you have a preference of one over the other?
No, absolutely. They both are incredibly huge forces of my life.
Yeah.
So I try and juggle both and also be a housewife and, you know, and be a pet lover and, you know, just try and do everything that I can. But being a singer and working at Lock and Table are my full force, sure. Both of them.
So my confession is I know you through Lachlan Table.
Sure.
I know that you lead the Tummies.
Yep. With my husband.
With your husband?
Yes. Yes, and yes. We're both lead singers in that band, which is really, really unique.
The horrible thing is that's almost all I know.
Okay.
And I don't think I'm unique, which is one reason that I wanted to have you with us today.
Awesome.
Is so we can get to know you. I don't even know where you're from.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Oh, I do. Go ahead.
I grew up in Saskatchewan, in Canada, on the prairies.
You know what? You have that look about you.
I look Canadian. Oh my gosh.
That's hysterical.
I don't have any idea what people from Saskatchewan look like.
What's so funny is that I'm looking at myself right now in a black like chiffon dress and black suede boots on a hot Nashville day. I actually look more New York than I do Canadian.
It's just in Saskatchewan. Oh gosh, I'm so gonna tell on myself here because my Canadian geography is terrible.
That's okay. I can help you with that.
West.
It's smack dab in the middle of the country.
Smack dab in the middle.
But if you're looking at North America as a whole, we are just north of Montana and North Dakota.
Okay.
So it's if you can imagine flatlands,
right.
Cowboys and Indians,
yep.
Bison, big sky country, Canada.
Sure.
Prairies. I grew up in the prairies. It's wheat fields, like just farming fields.
Wow.
Yeah. But I didn't grow up in the farm.
Okay.
I grew up in the city. So not that it was a big city, but it was the capital of our province. So I grew up in our biggest city.
Is Regina?
That's the city.
Yes! Sammy, I did it.
Yeah, that's my town.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Okay, I know very little about that, but now I know a little bit more than I did.
Okay.
What does one do in Regina, Saskatchewan?
Depends on who you are. I mean,
what does Dana do?
Well, Dana lived in Regina, Saskatchewan until she was in her early 20s. I was a singer my whole life in Saskatchewan. I was in my first band when I was 15. Okay. I graduated from high school at 15. I know it sounds crazy,
that
but we start school a year younger than everybody in America.
Okay.
I started school when I was 4.
Okay.
And just the way my birthday fell, I got out of school in grade 12, 6 months early because I just got all my credits and I wanted to get out of school and play with my band.
Wow.
That's what I did. So I got all the credits to graduate. So I graduated in December. I was 16, sorry. I didn't turn 17 until February. So I was 16 when I got out of high school. And I was playing in my band, and that's all I wanted to do.
So as I'm picturing kind of the landscape as you've described it,
yep.
Montana and North Dakota and
yep.
cowboys and plains and wheat, I'm thinking a country western type vibe?
It's very much, their old school Saskatchewan is very much like that.
Okay.
Rural Saskatchewan is very country and western.
Right.
But you know what? We grew up in our little cosmopolitan town. And so I grew up with rock and roll my whole life.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. My dad was super country and western. My mom was super rock and roll. So I got the blend of both.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful. Okay. At 16, you graduate high school, you yep. have your band. Are you guys yep. touring?
It was fun. The guitar player was my boyfriend. And we had a band called The Advocates. And we played around. And then my boyfriend, who is a year older than me, was 17. He was ready to move to Vancouver. And I was like, oh my God. I can't go. I'm only 16. So he went, and then I joined another band called Noise and the Boys, and I played in that band.
Were you Noise?
I certainly was.
She was not the voice.
She was not the voice.
I certainly was. And so I played in that band for about 5-7 years, I guess, and we toured around.
Okay.
And then, like, I played all the venues that I could where yeah. I was. It was still so small town,
yeah.
and I had visions of grandeur. I wanted to be bigger. I wanted to be more. So I moved to Toronto.
Okay. So you went the other direction from Vancouver.
Yes.
Right?
I went to Toronto. Yeah.
And that was, you're in your 20s by that point?
1988.
And did the boys come with you?
No, actually. They all stayed behind. They all had other things going on and Yeah, they all stayed. Some of them moved out west. They went to BC. Like, if you live, if you're from Saskatchewan, you either go east or west.
Right.
Two of my best friends went to Vancouver, and a couple of them went to Toronto. So I decided to go to Toronto, and I was really happy there because I was actually born in Ontario, which is east. So Ontario is Toronto.
Right.
So I had family from there, and I already knew Ontario. So, and I had grandparents and cousins and aunts and uncles. So I moved to Toronto just knowing that I had family there, like just outside of Toronto. But Toronto was very short-lived for me. I got there and I got scouted by an agent from New York when I was singing in a club one night. And they were just like, hey, come to New York. And I was like, really? And I was like, okay, are you for real? Like, are you true to this? So I actually flew to New York twice for some business meetings with this agency, and they were completely legit. And I thought I was just going to live in Toronto forever because I loved it. And I moved to New York.
Wow.
In 1991.
Okay.
And I worked with this agency for 10 years.
Gooch, have you ever been scouted by an agency to do anything?
He's thinking.
The fact that you even have to consider this question is a little bit impressive.
Yeah.
You know, so when I was seven...
I love this.
I'm curious as to where this is going. I'm a little concerned.
No. I mean, it falls in line with, you know, church. So when I was seven, I think I was at Dan Mills, and one of my classmates' moms worked at Lifeway Christian.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And they had their monthly magazine. And we were doing class pictures, like where we all stood on the stage and, you know, somebody's like poking somebody in the ear.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah.
And
me too.
Of course, we're taking the pictures and all the parents are there, you know, after the whatever assembly or whatever. And who is on the front row just showing his teeth and grinning away while everybody else is just like being complete turds?
It was you.
Oh, yeah.
Me. And so, yeah, I mean, I have a couple magazines.
So basically,
he had a modeling contract.
As Dana is telling this story,
yeah.
Regina, Toronto, New York, you're thinking, I know that. I've been there.
Yeah, I've been there.
I've lived that life.
Yeah.
I love it.
From East Nashville to the Lifeway Christian.
It's the exact same thing, just parallel lives right here. It's amazing that y'all's agent never put your two together.
It makes our heart happy.
It does. You know, I went over the bridge to take pictures, and that's the furthest I ever traveled in my life at that time. So enough about me, though.
Dana, what is New York like in 1991 for a young 20-something that's been scouted by agents?
Thank you for asking that question. It was alive. It was gigantic. It was bustling. It was electric. It was more than you could imagine. I was excited. I was hungry. I really was chasing my dream. Mm-hmm. I was really wanted to move to New York to try and get a record deal. I wanted to be an artist. I was writing at the time, still do, but I was writing as a very young woman, just wanted to be in it. And I got there and I got in it. I made a record in New York. I worked with this agency. It was really fun. It was an agency that had the contract on the Plaza Hotel, on all the ballrooms. So the Plaza Hotel, the St. Regis, the Waldorf Astoria, and the Peninsula. So if you booked a band in any of these rooms, I was probably in one of those bands. So I was a sequin gown singer for many, many years. So I was like a contracted hired singer. So I did that for years. And I was also... I like to call it myself as a showgirl. I had 3 years of Atlantic City where I played at Merv Griffin's Resorts.
Are you serious?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes. 1991, 92, and 93. Kind of before, I know this sounds crazy, but before Trump came in and built up all his castles there. So I played at Merv Griffin's Resorts, the original casino in Atlantic City. And yeah.
How many times did you sing Don Kershane?
You know what's funny? That one was never on my list. I did a 70s review. So I wore like, in the early 90s, I was wearing like bell bottoms and like fringed vests. And I did all 70s R&B. So I was singing Gladys, Aretha, Otis, Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
I was doing all the 70s stuff.
Okay.
So that was my gig.
Dreaming about going to New York your entire childhood.
Yep.
You get the call while you're in Toronto. suddenly dreams may become reality. You have to start forming a picture in your head.
Yep.
How close was reality to the picture that was in your head?
Well, I feel like I chased it for a long time. I had work, so I was getting paid to be a singer.
Yeah.
So that is reality.
That's living the dream,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's reality. I got an apartment in Chelsea on 29th between 8th and 9th, which is probably one of the best neighborhoods in New York City. It's just, it's smack dab, like you're right close to Port Authority, which is the bus station. So if you need to travel somewhere, you're right beside Madison Square Garden, which is Amtrak. So you can get on the train, you can get on the Long Island Railroad. It's easy to travel and you can walk 15 minutes downtown. You're in Soho, 15 minutes uptown. You're in the, you know, on the Upper West Side. So it's like, I used to walk everywhere. New York was, you know, I made lots of money when I lived in New York. It's really funny, but I did get a day job as well because my rent was $1,000 a month in the 90s. So being single and I needed to live my lifestyle with my clothes and my jewelry habit and my makeup and, you know, and my hair, I had to.
Bell bottoms in your sequins.
And all my bell bottoms and sequins. I had a day job as well. So I was working days, singing nights, singing weekends. I worked around the clock. So I had a great reality.
Okay.
You know, I really did. I worked hard for my money, in the words of Donna Summer.
It sounds like you did.
I did. I worked hard for my money, but I loved it. I was young. I had that excitement and that hunger and that energy where I was unstoppable, you know?
That song immediately came to my head when you said that. Like, I can just imagine you just like,
yeah,
I was, so, yeah, you were about house. To sing it. Come on, Gooch, give me at least one line.
No, not at all. Like, yeah, I can imagine you like getting at home at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning.
No, honey, you have to realize my gigs sometimes started at midnight. Wow. So I was getting home at 4 and then having to go to a day job. So I'd come home from my day job, have a nap, take off my work clothes, have a nap, start getting primped and ready at 11 o'clock at night to go back out to play. I know. And you know what? Thank God that only lasted for so long because that is criminal to do that to your body.
Yeah.
But you know,
well, it's not sustainable long term.
No, it certainly isn't. I was young and I was meeting people and I was being invited into great circles of friends and people that I just never thought that I had an opportunity to get close to. And I was just doing what I wanted to do and got my foot in the door and was having a great time.
Okay.
You know, just having a great time.
How long were you in New York?
12 years.
Okay. So
Oh, yeah.
It was a minute.
Yeah.
It was a run.
1991 through 03. And I swear, I thought I was going to be that old lady in New York with like red lipstick walking her dog down the street with like too many bracelets on. You know, I was like, I can see myself as that woman. And this is my next life-changing moment was I got a call the summer of 2001 to go out and sing on Martha's Vineyard for 6 months.
Yeah.
I got called by an agent who needed a singer for 6 months and said, I'll give you a place to live. I'll give you this many gigs. I can pay you this much money. And I thought, wow, this is exciting. I'd already been singing in New York for 10 years, playing in the Hamptons all summer for the last 10 years because I played in a band in the Hamptons for many years. And I thought, oh, this will be fun. A different beach. Sure, why not? So I got out to Martha's Vineyard. And if you've ever been there, it's one of the most magical islands on the planet. It's a beach everywhere, and there's forests, and there's trees, and there's sand, and it's just gorgeous. And there's 120,000 people in the summer and 20,000 people in the winter. And it was just magical. And I got there, and on my very first gig, I met my husband, who was the bass player on my gig. And boom, life changed.
Just like that.
Again, another life-changing moment.
Did you know? Like, was it the lightning bolt?
Oh my goodness. It was ridiculous. And I'm going to tell you how random this is. So I only knew the keyboard player and the drummer on this bar. It was a bar gig. And my drummer friend said, yeah, just bring your set list. Know your keys. You know, it's a bar gig. It's 3 hours, 3 sets. And he's like, oh, you're going to love these guys. Paulie's a guitar player. He's from Texas. He's a blues guitar player. And I'm thinking, oh no, do I have to sing the blues for three sets? I'm in trouble now. And then he said, and Juddy, he's the bass player. He knows every song in the world. Just call your key. And I'm thinking, okay, great. So Juddy shows up. Everyone plugs in. They do a little shuffle just to start, get their sounds. And I step on stage. Typically, on a bar gig where you don't know everybody, you would like call Ain't No Sunshine in A minor. What do I call? First song? So Very Hard to Go by Tower of Power, 1972, maybe. Why would I do that? I don't know. I'm getting goosebumps just telling you this. It's like unbelievable. I call Tower of Power. I look at Judd, the bass player. His mouth drops and he goes, what key? And I say G, and he starts playing it. And we get through that song and we have the best gig of our lives. He looks at me after the gig and said, why would you do that? And I said, I don't know. There was a higher power that came through my body and straight through my brain and through my body and said, we have to play So Very Hard to Go. And I'm like, how did you know that? And he said, when he was 9 years old in the car with his sister going to hockey camp, that was on the radio. And she was driving him and he was so little. He was like 60 pounds going off to hockey camp and he was terrified. And she pulled up to hockey camp. She turned up the radio and she said, Juddy, listen to this song. It's So Very Hard to Go by Tower of Power. This is amazing. And he remembers crying, getting out of the car. And that is how he remembers that song. He'd never played that song before on a bandstand in his life. I've got goosebumps.
There are so many reasons I love getting to talk to people like you. One of which is that entire story contains layer upon layer upon layer of things I know nothing about.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me.
That's why it was one of the most poignant moments of my life. Like one of the most poignant 3.5 minutes of my life changed my world.
Wow. Was he based in Nashville? Is that how you eventually got this direction?
No. He was a New Yorker as well. He had been playing in New York for years and years and years. What's funny is he left New York summer of 91 to move to Martha's Vineyard. I moved to New York summer of 91, so I missed him in New York.
Yeah.
And then I meet him on the Vineyard summer 2001. And he'd been living on the Vineyard all this time, being a full-time musician, playing seven nights a week. So he's a full-time musician when I meet him.
Okay. Wow. The one thing I understood in that story was the lightning bolt.
Yeah.
That moment, yep. I can connect with.
Yep.
The moment I cannot connect with is walking on stage with people you don't know, having never rehearsed.
How fun is that? And playing the whole night.
Any song. Like, if you walk up there and say, you know, play Chopsticks, it's still amazing to me that a person can walk on stage and not know anybody and just start playing and play three full sets.
Oh, yeah. You just know, I know my song list and I know the keys I play them in. Because I'm a contralto, I'm a much lower singer than most girls. Most girls are like sopranos. And so everything that I play is like a full step down from what like a lot of record keys are. So I play a lot of stuff in male keys. So I just have to know all my keys. So I get on a bandstand and I call them in my keys. So, and Judd can play anything in any key. So thank God for him.
Gooch, do you play anything?
No.
He plays football.
Yeah.
There you go. He plays baseball.
And baseball. Yeah. That's about it. I will say though that, you know, you mentioned David, that you can't imagine doing that, right?
Right.
Like, but I think one of the most amazing things about this conversation is, number one, we're getting to know Dana a lot more because some of the stuff I don't know.
Right.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
But also too, like, I think we've had opportunities, and we talk about this a lot. David and I talk about it a lot, but we aim to talk about it a lot in the podcast about the community and how it's connected. But March 3rd, 2020.
Mm-hmm. I remember that day.
We didn't know most of the people that we got on stage to play with.
Mm.
But we just knew we had to play a song.
Oh, see, I see what you did there.
You know?
I see what you did there,
All the community that, you know, you may have seen faces, but next thing you know, we're all on stage. It's go time.
Yeah, you're right.
We knew what key we had to play.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could.
Songs in the key of life.
Yeah. Hey. I didn't know you could play that key. But we played those keys.
We did. So, we did.
You are the most colorful storyteller I've ever met.
Thank you.
Like, I'm sitting here, and of course, for those of you listening, I do have glasses on, as always.
He does.
But I'm sitting here looking like, I can just see, like, the cartoon. Like, I can see your stories just like,
all unfold.
I see it, like, yeah. in, like, as clear as you probably lived it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
Well, that's the songwriter in you.
Well,
you paint
that
pictures.
Too. Yes, yes. We tell, we write little mini movies in 3 minutes.
Yeah, that's, yeah, yeah. absolutely.
Like that excerpt was a short film. Like, that was a 25-minute film that I would watch that. Like, it was so much in that. And your husband's not even here.
I know, actually. He was very excited that I was coming to hang out with you guys today.
If he was here, could you imagine that story from her view, from his view?
It's pretty electric. That's how I describe it. Not many people get to find that feeling in their lifetime, or they find it on a different avenue.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
On a different avenue. But mine was wet fish in the face. Like, mine was...
wet fish in the face. I like that.
Mine was higher power. It literally straight through my body. And I almost levitated. Like, I felt like I was creating... I was otherworldly in that moment.
So, 176 2nd Avenue North downtown. Mm-hmm. It rest in peace, because it got bombed last year. In the mid to late 90s, there was a dance club called The Underground. And my friends and I would go every Monday night. It was a retro night. And you go and you dance and everybody, it was like the perfect combination of a really like seedy, dark, gritty club. And people would wear their dog collars and their black eye makeup. And then there was, you know, some of your college kids that would come from Belmont and Vandy, and we thought it was cool to be around the people with the dog. So, you know, it felt kind of dangerous, but it wasn't actually dangerous. It was that place.
Right. Very diverse.
We thought so.
I was saying.
We thought so. Dude, I was 18
yeah,
at the time.
Yeah, no, hey.
Mm-mm. Every week, you know, and there's guys and there's girls and there's dancing and there's drink, all those things. And I've been going there every week for a year. And one day, I'm standing there, and down the steps to the dance floor walks this girl with red lipstick. And I had that moment. It was like everything stopped. Everything was dark, and somehow there was a spotlight just on this one human. And I said, well, shoot, I guess I'm done, because that's the one.
You had your moment.
I had that moment. It's the classic flirting from across the dance floor all night long, never actually dance together. I finally work up the nerve to talk to her. We find some common friends. If you're in Nashville long enough, you always have that, and then we're off and running. Here's the thing. This is what I want to hear from you.
Okay.
I had that moment. My moment was different than yours. Mm-hmm. But I knew, just like you knew. Eventually, because we're all humans, you don't have that feeling anymore. It's not always the higher power straight down through your entire body. It's mm-hmm. not always the electric. But you wake up every day. I wake up every day. And I get to choose to love my wife that day mm-hmm. with everything I have. You know, with the overflow of the love that's in me. It's gonna, you know, the dam's gonna break, and I'm gonna love my wife that day, and I get to make that choice. To me, that's the most romantic thing in the world. You know, it's not this. I'm a puppet. I'm a marionette that can't control myself. No, I get to choose, and every day I choose her. Mm-hmm. It's so important, because sometimes we have that feeling, we have that moment, the wet fish in the face, and then you wake up 5 years later, 8 years later, 15 years later, and you're like, I don't feel like I felt on that stage in Martha's Vineyard that night. What happened?
Right.
I think it's incredibly important for all of us that have had that moment to remember that moment is the beginning of a lifetime of choosing one another.
Absolutely.
So that's a beautiful thing.
And you know, marriage is definitely something that you must respect. and meet in the middle to always find that beauty. Mm-hmm. Because if you've had it once, you can hang on to it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You can hang on to it, and it's work, and it's beautiful work, and it's our work.
Yeah.
It's what we do. It's what we give to each other. It's our commitment.
That's beautiful work. I love it. Is that's it's exactly what work. That's exactly what marriage is. It's work, but it's beautiful work. I love that.
And my husband came off the road this morning. I was getting ready to come to do this, and he was literally just unloading his truck with all of his gear and bags. And he gave me a kiss. I made him eggs, and I came here. And I won't see him again till late tonight. But he'd been gone for 6-7 days. But it's, I'm happy he's home, and we get to do what we do, and we both respect and support each other. And that's, again, it's beautiful work.
How long have you and Juddy been in Nashville?
We got here winter 05.
Okay. So if my math is correct, you were on the vineyard for how long?
Well, I was on the vineyard from 2001. No, here's the deal. I thought that I was going to be that girl that did 6 months on the vineyard, 6 months in New York. I was going to be that girl who had like the best of both worlds.
Right.
But after the first 2 years of doing the commute every 6 months, I didn't want New York anymore. I felt like I'd grown out of it.
Okay.
I didn't need that pace anymore. I had been on the vineyard. I wanted my toes in the sand. I wanted to hear the waves crash. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go swimming. I wanted the bars to close last call 12:20, be out by midnight, right. Or be out by 12:30. Like, I wanted that lifestyle. So I gave up New York in 03 and moved full-time on the vineyard. And then we stayed for another couple years. But being musicians on Martha's Vineyard, you can only work 6 months a year because it's a tourist island. So every winter, you either spend all your summer money or you leave the island and you go work somewhere. So the first year Judd and I were together, we went to the island of St. Bart's and got a gig for a month, which was beautiful and delicious. Right. And then the next year was winter of 05. And we decided we'd been writing country songs, and we were really, really inspired by country music at that time. It was a very different country market then, if you think. It was still really kind of a Garth Brooks, Trisha Yearwood, Martina McBride kind of town. It wasn't really a Brad Paisley, Taylor Swift town yet. So when we decided to move to Nashville, we thought we really wanted to get a publishing deal. That's what our goal was, being country songwriters. So we moved to Nashville. For 5 months, we left all of our stuff on the vineyard because I was still contracted to sing the next summer. So we left everything, came to Nashville, rented an apartment downtown, and just decided, let's go, let's jump in. Let's meet people, let's shop our stuff and see if we can fit in, if our music can balance with what's happening in Nashville. And after the first 3 months of us being here, Juddy got the Rodney Atkins touring gig.
Okay.
And it was before Rodney was a star.
Yeah.
So it was... Judd got the gig in like maybe March or April of 06. And that was before Rodney Atkins' single, If You're Going Through Hell, before it even was released. Mm. So Judd is in that very first video. And so Judd rode that wave for the first 10 years we were here. Judd was on tour with Rodney. And then Judd got tired of the road for a minute and came back home and freelanced for a couple years. And now he's out playing with Maggie Rose and Them Vibes. And that tour is beautiful and amazing.
Awesome.
So, So Nashville's been good to us.
Beautiful. 05 to what year are we in now?
21.
Does time even exist anymore?
We've been here 16 years.
16 years. You've seen a lot of change in 16 years.
A lot of change.
The changes you've seen, and I'm going to get to Lachlan Table in just a second because I'm really fascinated about the stories that you see that come in and out of that amazing place.
I want to hear about it.
Yeah, I bet you do. But the changes you've seen between 05 and 21, 16 years, what are the changes that you love the most? And what are the things that have changed that you wish never did?
Okay. The things that I love the most about the change is I always said that I was never going to live in another big city after living in New York. And then when we chose Nashville, I thought, this is great. It's a little big town. And it was in those days. It was just a fun small town that had, it was like a small dog. It had like, but big dog energy, I loved that about Nashville. But as I've been involved with the growth of Nashville, working at Lachlan Table, I adore the change that's happened because of the influx of tourism and the money that's coming into Nashville. Lachlan Table gets to profit. And when Lachlan Table profits, I profit.
Sure, yeah.
So every seed feeds. We are so lucky with the influx of tourism and just the population increase, and especially in this neighborhood, population increase. Lachlan Table is incredibly successful, and therefore I get to be successful.
And you know, I love that you said that because Gooch and I, both Nashville natives, us folks that grew up in this town, often sit around and lament all the changes. You know, the death of Nashville 1.0, these landmarks that were huge parts of our childhood that are now gone, and you know, we're now the old man shaking our fist at the clouds.
Right.
You know, get off my lawn. We're that guy.
Yep.
But we so often forget so much of the change we have experienced allows so many more of us to thrive.
Right. And I celebrate that.
Yeah, and it should be celebrated.
And I celebrate that. I'm the girl who sees the glass half full all the time. And the thing that you can't change is change.
Ooh.
So,
I feel like there's a song in there somewhere.
Right? Gooch. So I am a believer in change. That. I love growth. I love anything that is forward motion. I believe that snowball effect is what keeps us young.
Yeah.
I don't like stagnant. I don't like to, what's so funny is that I remain in my job titles for years and years and years, but I feel like my snowball is always rolling. You know, it's very funny that I say that I don't like change. I'm stagnant. I worked with Kara and Hal at Eastland Cafe together for 5 years, and then I stayed on another 4 over there. So I stayed in one job for 9 years, and now I've been at Lachlan Table for 5. So it's funny that I like to lock into things, but I love to grow within my community.
To say you've only been at Lachlan Table for 5 is ridiculous, because 5 is certainly a long time. But I've only been back in the city for 4 years. So it's hard for me to imagine Lachlan Table without you. The fact that there was a Lachlan Table that existed before Dana was at the front door is weird for me to think about. Okay, because you love change, the second question I asked may be harder for you to answer, which is, what change have you seen in 16 years that you wish didn't happen?
Well, there's been a change in the music industry, which has been very, very difficult, and nobody's getting record deals anymore. That change is unstoppable at this point.
Is this the streaming platforms?
Yeah,
is this
streaming platforms, just everything digital now. I mean, it's not like it used to be, and I'm old school. Like, the Tummies just made vinyl records, and, you know, I like things the old way. I would have loved nothing more than to have gotten a label deal and had that kind of finance and support by a big wheel. You know, but that never happened to us. So we just have to jump on our own personal bandwagon and you know, get out there and hammer nails ourselves to try and get things built. So the change in the music industry has been very hard, especially being in Nashville, because they call it Music City. Yeah. Well, it is a title.
Yeah.
It's just words. But when we moved to Nashville, I was really, really hoping for, I had visions of grandeur, like all young people do. And I thought I was good enough for it. And I never got the publishing deal that I was looking for. And they didn't, I came from New York where I got paid to sing. I was a jingle singer in New York. I made lots of money. People paid me for my voice. Well, I got to Nashville and my very first gig, they passed a hat. And we made $35. Mm. And I had to share that with my husband, and our bar tab was more than that. So I was like, okay, this change is going to be difficult for me.
Yeah.
So that change was hard. The flood of 2010 was really hard for me. I watched a lot of things diminish, and that was really sad. I had been through 9/11 in New York, so I'd seen a lot of disaster, and the tornado here. I've seen those kind of changes that are heartbreaking.
I
was through 9/11. I was through the flood and the tornado. Yeah. So I've seen a lot of things lost, and it makes me sad.
Mm. Wow.
I know. Do you have tears in your eyes?
No.
Excuse.
Well, I do.
I'm getting close.
Which I also love that about you, that you have.
It makes us stronger, guys, and that's why we're here today.
It does.
Because we have each other. And
well, yeah, and that's what I was about to say. Like, your dreams, they didn't happen here. Well, they're happening here, just in a different way.
You know what? I'm a dreamer. And, you know, my father has always said that about me. He's like, I really wished you'd gone to college and, like, you know, become a doctor or a lawyer or something with your life, Dana. And it's like, I'm a dreamer, and I will always follow those paths wherever they take me. And today I'm sitting in this beautiful little room with all of you. And
see, that's what I'm saying. That's your dream.
Yeah.
Like I wish that, and I think we talked about it a little bit in our with JJ.
Yeah.
Just expectations that people have in life. Like at the end of the day, like it's okay. Everything is okay. And mainly because, like you just said, we're right here.
Yeah.
This makes, like, whatever you got going on, this makes everything. For me, this makes everything 100% okay. I've got my people.
Yeah, we get to share our stories.
Storytelling is the best way to live your dream.
Well, and oftentimes it's the tragedies that make the stories that bring us together. It's those common connections. I feel like Nashville began to transform and become what we know today in the 98 tornadoes.
Right.
Yeah.
April 98, that almost went the exact same path. Of course, then you have the 2010 flood.
Yep.
And obviously the 2020 tornado. Jeez. But there are stories of this city that most of us don't know, and we don't do a good job of sharing. Do you know why Nashville's called the Music City? You know where that came from?
I actually don't know the catchphrase. No, where did it come from?
You go first.
Fisk Jubilee Singers.
Yeah.
Okay. See, I didn't know that.
Yeah. They, I can't even begin to give you a date, but they were on an international tour. Mm-hmm. Queen Victoria.
Okay.
Queen.
Yes.
Queen.
Okay.
And they came, performed for the Queen in London, and the Queen said, the city you come from. Must be the Music City.
Okay.
So we think it's, you know, oftentimes it's easy to go, you know, downtown, honky-tonks, bars, songwriters, whatever, it's the Music City.
Right.
Way predates that. And it's a form of music that we don't even celebrate today, sadly. Right. It's those stories that we have. It's that common history that we have.
That give us the title.
Oh, my gosh.
This is off, but it's on. You know, I was reading an article, and my grandparents, great-grandparents lived in North Nashville, and my grandparents also too. But, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Aretha Franklin, North Nashville, Jefferson Street was their spot.
Nice.
That was music before the Broadway, before country music, George Strait was making country music, but it was Jimi Hendrix, Aretha Franklin. It was those guys that were coming to Nashville, to North Nashville, making music.
What venues were they playing?
I can't remember. So down Jefferson Street, basically it looks kind of like East Nashville now, where everything where they were playing is torn down. Right. I've got a picture. A friend of mine sent me a picture of all of the old spots, and I'll text it to you. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think people realize, like, that is the Music City Nashville.
Was War Memorial there in those days?
I think War Memorial's always been downtown, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Right.
But there was a whole scene in that corridor that I can only hear. I've only heard stories about.
I mean,
of course, it pre-existed to me. But it's also all been torn down, and much of the history's been lost.
Yeah. I mean, James Brown, like,
right,
all here in Nashville making
that's
music.
That's awesome.
Like,
Music City.
That's why we're Music City.
Like, because it keeps playing.
Yeah.
Everyone keeps playing.
Gosh.
So Danny, you have the music is what got you here.
Yes.
And we are grateful to the music for that.
Yes, absolutely.
Because we love that you're
here. Following our dream, you know.
Shout out to the music.
You have a whole huge other part of your life, and it is based half a block from where we're sitting right now.
Exactly.
Where you are in many ways the concierge and maitre d' for the entire community. I can't imagine the stories that you can tell as front of house at Lachlan Table.
I love it. I have lots of great stories, yes.
Before we get to any of those stories, in my job as a pastor, people think that I work 25 minutes a week on Sunday mornings.
Right.
You know, easiest job in the world, right? You get up there and you talk for 30 minutes and then you walk away. Obviously, there's more that goes into my job than that. Your job has to be similar in that people think your job is answering the phone, writing down reservations, and walking people to the table.
It is that.
But it is so much more than that.
Yep.
It has to be. So,
well,
Explain to me the nuts and bolts of what you actually do.
Well, my job is a lot. And I love what I get to give to people because I get to be Dana at my job. Yeah. So my job is pen and paper. My job is reservations and, you know, making sure that all of that is laid out correctly in a book so that we can flow for the evening. My job is people. People walk in and they ask of me and I can either give or I can't give. Yeah. And that's on a daily basis. So I feel like some days I feel like a used car salesman. It's like, I can give you a table for 1 hour. And, sure. And I, you know what, I just try and make everybody comfortable and give everybody what they need when they need it. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, we can accommodate, but there's that one time that I just don't have the space and, or you can wait, or, you know, I'm just trying to put the pieces together all the time. It's like a game of Lego or Jenga, yeah. You know, well, it's constant.
An establishment as vibrant and alive and dynamic and successful as Lachlan Table, your job, you have to be the puzzle master.
Absolutely. Yes. Hence the Jenga. Hence.
Right. Right.
It's like you're always juggling. Nothing is ever carved in stone. It's written in pencil, but it's not carved in stone. So we are manipulating the dining room constantly to accommodate. Let's say a 4-top shows up with a 5-top. We're a real tiny restaurant. Where are we going to put that
right.
fifth person?
Right.
You know? So it's, I'm a puzzle master. You know, I'm always reconfiguring, doing the best I can, thinking on the spot all the time.
You are in a world that most people, I'm making bold assumptions here, and please tell me.
Please do.
Most people that walk in the door assume that you are there specifically for them. And when they made a reservation for 4 and they're 5, it's your job to figure it out. And if you can't, because it just can't happen, right. It's your fault, not theirs.
Right.
That's got to be, because you've got to do it all with a smile on your face.
Yep.
How can those of us that come into Lachlan Table and see your smiling face, which we always see your smiling face, A, recognize that it's not as easy as you make it look, and B, help you to feel seen?
Well, I think everybody helps me feel seen. I don't even think that's, I mean, I don't even know how to answer that. I feel like everybody gives me mad props when they walk in. They'll like walk in and they'll go, "Are you Dana? I talked to you on the phone. You totally hooked me up. Thank you so much." And I think that's Kara and I and Katie, my managers, we talk about our reservation system. We didn't go online because there's a certain community and importance to me picking up the phone and calling people back who are requesting reservations and helping them, manipulating times with their schedules so that we can accommodate them with our schedule. We make it very personal. So I feel like I am always very seen with the people that walk in because they recognize me as being that person that helped them.
Yeah.
So that respect I feel is already there with the people that I've spoken to on the phone. The people that are just walking in that don't have a reservation or are just, you know, tourists in Nashville, they don't realize that we're a small restaurant, very popular in a community established neighborhood, and they don't realize that we're already fully booked. So when I don't have something to offer them that they're hoping for, I am the bad guy, but I do my best to let them know that I could offer you at this time if you wanted to come back, or you could stay and wait for an outside table. These are my options. You might be able to wait for a bar seat, but 9 times out of 10, it's like I try to do the best I can to accommodate them with a smile on our face because we're in the service industry and we are here to serve. So a lot of times people do make it my fault that I can't accommodate them, but you know what? It doesn't happen all the time.
Gooch, is that you?
It doesn't happen all the time.
No,
I see it, but
I come in, but I call ahead.
You do.
I call because that service is the differentiator between Lachlan Table and the staff and some of the good spots in our community is that we're personable.
Right.
And we take the time and we talk to people and we get to know
it's so important
in this platform. And that was really the premise, right, David, of us having this podcast.
Yes, absolutely.
Is to create a personable experience with everyone we interview. And so, yeah, no, I call.
Yes, you've been good at that lately.
Even though.
She did add the lately part. Lately,
yes. Well, because before I sucked at it and I said to myself, I need to call. Maybe they, more than likely, I could get accommodated. But you know what? Mm-mm.
But I love you. Always come at 4 o'clock when we first open our doors. Yes. And it's like at 4 o'clock, I can almost make any magic happen.
Yeah.
You know, we're really, really flexible at 4 o'clock.
I won't just show up at 7 ever. I know how crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? We're a small, successful restaurant. And like, if anybody's listening that wants to come and visit us, please give me a call. 228-4864.
Shameless plug. And I'm glad that you did that. There's so much I love about Lock and Table.
Their staff team works hard, dude.
So hard.
They work hard. So if you do need a reservation, call. Don't just show. I mean, they work hard.
Obviously, hard. Hal does a great job.
Amazing.
With the menu and the food is incredible. The back of house is incredible. The front of house is unbelievable. Kara and the way she makes it all work and come together is incredible. The thing. There are other restaurants in this city that can do that stuff. I don't know another restaurant that can match what you and your team do, Dana.
Thank you.
And that's what makes Lachlan Table stand out. It's the fact that you haven't gone digital. Somebody needs to make a reservation. They're going to hear your voice.
Yes, and they hear my voice. Exactly. And so many people, I love that you say that. So many people walk in, they go, I know who you are. I talked to you on the phone.
And it's community. It's seeing and being seen, knowing and being known.
You've got that connection with that person, and they've already walked through your door with a smile on their face. They're like, okay, beautiful. I have a connection with the girl at the door. Yeah. We talked on the phone. Yeah.
I mean, and you probably talked about their dog or something, right?
Yes,
right?
I know. Everybody in the neighborhood and their dogs.
There was a dog on the patio yesterday sitting right behind me, and every time anyone came out of the door, I thought they were looking at me and they were very impressed and they were so excited I was there until every single time I realized, oh yeah, it's the dog.
There's a dog.
That was Cody
me.
in her new rescue puppy. Yes.
I didn't realize it was a rescue puppy. That's beautiful.
Awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
One of my favorite things about getting to love and serve this community is the fact that it is, by every definition and every measurable metric, just that, a community.
Right.
Where when Cody comes in with her dog, mm-hmm. half the other people that come in either know Cody or want to know Cody or want to know the dog.
Yep.
When you're on these sidewalks, the people, like, we're a church that's surrounded by real people that sit on their front porches and they walk their dogs and they take their kids to school and they go to the same restaurants and coffee shops, and you can actually know them.
You know,
and I can't imagine a better place to get to serve.
Yep.
So I'm blessed. Sammy's blessed. Both of you are blessed.
Absolutely.
To get to work and love and serve in this place we call East Nashville.
It is like no other community ever. Yeah. I have never known a community that knows people by their first name, knows their dogs, knows their kids' names, has their neighbors over on their front porch for a glass of wine. I mean, it is so incredibly open, this community. People are there for everybody. I mean, it's such a beautiful thing to see. I mean, I have met and know more neighbors in this hood now from working here at Lachlan Table that are actually personal girlfriends of mine now.
Yeah, sure. Beautiful. So you have told us a little bit about kind of the two main professional hats that you wear. I know a lot more about you than I did an hour ago.
Okay.
The two professional hats that you wear in the music industry, live performances, and at Lock and Table in the service industry are probably the two industries that were most affected by this pandemic over the last 18 months.
You are correct.
How has that been for you?
It's been a struggle. It was a real eye-opener. I was full of fear. You know, we're a small restaurant, and I was worried. A lot of people didn't make it through. We didn't know what was ahead of us. Mm. When the pandemic first hit, it was coming right out of a tornado. Lachlan Table, you know, the tornado, we lost our power. We lost two friends in the tornado. We helped our community and our neighbors cut down trees, clean up yards, pick up pieces, pick up broken hearts. We did everything that we could. Once we got our power back on, we opened the restaurant about 12, 14 days later. We opened up for a few days and COVID shut us down. So here we are, full of fear a second time. Yeah. Just right when we had some hope again and our people were coming to our rescue, like, support Lachlan Table, we need each other. We were like there to celebrate our friends and neighbors. And then COVID hit, and Lachlan Table was able to stay open for the first 3 months with just doing curbside. So Hal kept his kitchen staff on, and Kara was able to keep her servers working. We got the PPP loan, and I wasn't needed at our job, so I stayed home for the first 3 months. First 30 days was great. My husband was home off the road. Yeah. We were cooking. We were drinking wine. We were writing songs. First 30 days were great. Second 30 days, I still thought was kind of fun. I gained 5 pounds. And then I thought, okay, what's happening? Then 90 days rolled around and I said, I'm scared. I don't know what is in store. I'm not sure what to expect. Do we have the energy for our restaurant to still survive? Where's the funding? What's going to happen? My husband, all his tours were canceled. So my husband was off the road for a year and a half. Mm. I was lucky enough after 3 months to come back to work. Kara and Hal invited us all back in and said, tell me, who's ready to come back? Do we feel safe enough to do this? Do you think we can start? Let's pick a date. Let's see if everybody feels good enough. And we came up with a date, and it was like Memorial weekend. And we all came back to work, and everyone was terrified. We didn't know what to expect. It was, you know, full masks. We were still in the point where, like, you touch something, wash your hands. I mean, we were so afraid because this was the first, you know, the first 4 months of COVID, and people were dying. Yeah. But we had to be strong, and we wanted our friends and neighbors to come back and join us. We needed the business. We wanted that connection. We were afraid. So, you know, we'd just been through a tornado. People were still mourning. I mean, it was incredibly... I was full of fear. I was full of hope. There was that fine, weird balance where was glass half full, was glass half empty, you know, but me, I have my eye on the prize all the time. And I wanted nothing more than for our restaurant to succeed and for our neighborhood to be rebuilt and for everybody to have a feeling of security and a place to come. And Lachlan Table, I feel, was kind of that place.
It absolutely has been one of those places. I think when you guys opened your doors back up, that was a moment for our whole community. It's this signal of there's another side to this. I don't know when we're going to get there, but we're going to get there. The hard work, hard soil that Kara and Hal and you and your whole team have been tilling for years, building those relationships and planting those roots have absolutely bared fruit.
Bared fruit. We are fruitful.
Yes.
You are fruitful.
We'll go with that.
Bountiful.
It has been. In many ways, it's Lachlan Table is a little bit older than our congregation here. The current congregation at Church of Lachlan Springs, we are about 4 years old. And we look at what you guys do and the way you love the community well, and we learn a lot from that. And you see the way the community reacts to your restaurant, to your team, because you know them and they know you.
Yes, very much so.
I don't go on Open Table and make my reservations at Lachlan Table. And when I'm there, I'm seen and I'm known and people smile at me.
And we know what you drink.
And yes, you do.
And we know what you order.
And you give back to the community.
Yes,
love the community well. And so it absolutely is a place that when the doors open back up, it was a great moment for this neighborhood. Now, as we're seeing some numbers go back up and masks going back on, and there's a lot of the uncertainty that we felt this time last year. Yeah. Are you having some PTSD?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, I feel like we need to be mindful again. Like when they pulled the mask mandate a few months ago, it's almost like everyone just said, oh, COVID's over. COVID wasn't over. We it's not over. People are still getting sick. We're all vaccinated. People are still getting sick. I don't want to be scared. I want to feel strong, but is my mentality going to fight a virus? I don't think so, but I'm still going to persevere. I still want to be strong. I still want to be safe. I want my people to be safe.
Right.
I want everyone to still move forward. I feel like we just have to move forward. We can't look behind us. I mean, there's so much behind us that was broken with all of this.
Sure.
And I just want people to be safe. I want everybody to be safe and to feel good. And I think that is a direction that we all have to fight for and move in.
Scared and strong are not mutually exclusive.
Right.
You can be both simultaneously. In fact, I would argue you have to be both simultaneously. There is no courage without fear.
Right.
And as a community, I hope we continue to walk together.
Right.
In that balance, walking in both of those kind of parallel, simultaneous emotions, and it is that together that we all need to do. It's those first 30 days that you described. I remember that with my wife. We would, you know, we were taking 90 minute walks every afternoon, you know, it was kind of this beautiful time of we're all in this thing together. It faded quickly.
Yep.
I would love to get back to that, but my confession is, in this time of uncertainty, the third 30 days you described, my mind and spirit goes right back there.
Right.
And I have to remind myself that's okay. It's what we do with that emotion that makes the difference.
Yeah.
Okay. Dana.
Yes.
So Sammy over here, who's mm-hmm. on the wheels of steel, putting this whole thing together, she is from a place very similar to Regina, Saskatchewan, okay. Florida. I feel like those two are, you know, potato, potato, right?
I mean, almost identical.
Almost.
Yep. Prairies, yeah.
Yeah, basically the same.
Palm trees and wheat fields.
She has only been in Nashville a year.
Okay-ish.
Is it a year now?
A little more than a year. Been in the East the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give her in how to integrate herself into the community and what it means to be not only a Nashvillian, but an East Nashvillian, as you have learned and seen over the last 16 years?
Ooh. Well, that's an incredibly difficult question, but I mean, get to know your friends and neighbors. Get to know the people that are next to you. If you're at a restaurant, talk to people. Just get to know sharing stories with people that you've never met. And it's kind of, that's how things grow. You know, plant your seed wherever you go. If you pop into a coffee shop or you go see live music, go to the Five Spot. Go see some friends' bands play. Get to know people. Just open doors. I think the way to have fun and get to know your community and enjoy East Nashville is by visiting all the places that we have here. Like, go to Ugly Mugs. Go to the Five Spot. Go to, you know, just find where you fit in and just start talking to people. Come over to Lachlan Table. I'll introduce you to everybody.
And she would absolutely do that, Sam.
She will.
You know, it's just opening your heart and opening your mind and opening the door to new friendships. And just kind of walking around East Nashville, people will wave to you from their front porch. You know, it's like just getting to know your friends and neighbors over here. It's a pretty special place.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're already well aware of how open-hearted everybody is over here, which is unlike anywhere else I've ever lived.
Sammy, we need to get you a mic.
I ask the
questions about you, and then you just have to stand there and stare at
and
people.
Smile. And nobody gets to hear her voice.
Which, speaking of shameless plugs,
right.
Samantha Jean Koken is Samantha. Also an artist, entrepreneur, and has her own jewelry business.
Okay, she so does. Sammy you need Jean to get Clay. That out yes. in the world. Like, you need to get business cards so when you're out and wear your stuff so people can compliment it. Okay, good.
Well, Dana should also be wearing your jewelry as well.
You have often said, Sammy has often said to me, if I can get Beyonce to just wear one pair of my earrings,
absolutely.
This whole thing will blow
well,
up.
Yep.
Dana is basically the same thing.
There
if
we
I
go.
If I could just get Beyonce to sing one of my songs, then my songwriting career will blow up.
There we go.
Yep.
You, if Dana.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We'll talk.
And that's, yes. That's the one.
We'll talk.
You're going to blow up after that.
Exactly.
I guarantee it.
Exactly.
We are so grateful for you spending your time with us today.
My day is so full right now. I'm so grateful too. Yep.
So one thing before we close out that I want to remind you of.
Yes.
So I believe that each of us bear the imprint of the creator of the universe.
Yep.
Each of us designed to reflect the glory of God into the world, even when we don't know it. It's why there's so much incredible diversity in the world. So we can see so many different aspects of our creator every single day. The way you treat people and your smiling face reflects your creator into this community. And I'm so grateful for that. And I'm so grateful for you.
Absolutely. I accept. I'm a receiver.
Dana, we love you. Thank you so much.
I love you right back. Thank you so much for inviting me. What a beautiful way to start my day.